The world has enough oil, but not enough refineries to process it. That's the assessment from the biggest crude exporter, Saudi Arabia. So is this to blame for record higher fuel prices? And what are the solutions? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the program. I'm Nastasia Tay. Now, global oil prices have hit record highs for months. The rise has been blamed on the war in Ukraine and surging demand as economies recover from this pandemic. Another reason, though, is a lack of refineries to turn crude oil, what's dug up from the ground, into useful products such as petrol, diesel and jet fuel. Well, the price of Brent crude, the international benchmark, started this year at just below $80 a barrel. It went above $100 on February the 28th, as you can see there, 4 days after Russia invaded Ukraine, and then reached $128 a week later on March the 8th. The price has stayed above $100 a barrel since then, with the exception of just a few days. Now, for many of us, this leads to high prices at petrol pumps. Oil-producing countries have promised to increase production to meet demand, but the world's biggest oil exporter, Saudi Arabia, says the focus should rather be on boosting refining capacity.
Today, we don't see a lack of oil in the market. There is a lack of refining capacity, which is also an issue. So we need to invest more in refining capacity. And that's a policy decision that countries, especially consuming countries, need to make to ensure that there is enough capacity to refine the oil that is available.
Well, speaking of capacity, the International Energy Agency says the world has the capacity to refine about 100 million barrels of oil a day, but 20% is not usable. That's due to a lack of investment in refineries in some countries, particularly in Latin America. Global output has fallen by 3.3 million barrels a day since 2020, when the pandemic then slashed demand for fuel. The US has the world's largest refining capacity, but activity there has slowed to 17.9 million barrels a day. That's the lowest since 2014. Output is also down in other major refining countries such as China, Russia and India. Well, let's now bring in our guests. In Houston, we have Bob Kavanagh. He's an energy and oil analyst and an industry veteran. In Berlin, we have Thomas O'Donnell. He is an energy and geopolitical analyst and also a consultant on global energy systems. And also in Houston is Josh Young. He's the chief investment officer of Bison Interests. That's an investment firm focused on publicly traded oil and gas companies. A warm welcome to you all, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today on Inside Story. There's obviously a big difference between crude oil, which we've been just looking at the price of, and what you're actually paying at the pump in terms of prices. What is actually to blame for the high prices that we're seeing? Thomas, is it about refining or supply or both? It seems to me potentially both.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. And it also, you know, depends week to week, month to month. The United States is running at a very high capacity with the refineries. As your story pointed out, the refining capacity is down, but the utilization is basically maxed out, 94, 97% recently. But China, on the other hand, recently has been running the refineries at, you know, something like a third below max capacity. So there is a shortage of refineries in the world for what we have to do. And when some are offline, like now in China, or for example, look, Venezuela has a couple of the world's largest refineries, but they've been offline for a long time. What about Iran? Similarly. Mm-hmm. So that is a problem. But supply of crude is sort of the baseline problem here that's going to continue into the future. That's wrong to ignore that. If the United States wasn't releasing a million barrels a day now from the strategic reserve, we'd certainly have problems.
Well, Thomas, you mentioned the strategic petroleum reserves there. The U.S. and their allies have released these to try to cap the huge rise we've seen in fuel prices. Josh, let me ask, do you think that's made much of a difference, especially because we're mostly talking about crude here?
Yeah, so the SPR release has made a big difference in the sense that the market's very tight. And, I agree that there is this sort of combination in the short term of a refining crunch as well as oil supply crunch. And so what we've seen with China having reduced their refined product exports, as well as Russia having temporarily reduced substantially their exports, and now they're starting to export more. What we saw was a tight market for refining, but oil would have been, I mean, with where demand is right now, even with the refining crunch, oil prices might have been much, much higher if the SPR wasn't being released right now.
Well, at this point, I want to take a look at a graph, because U.S. President Joe Biden has accused refineries of raking in huge profits during a time of war, as we've referred to. Now, the price difference between a barrel of crude and the petroleum products refined from it is called a crack spread. So looking at this graph, that's the refining margin, really. Now, usually it's just over, what, $10 a barrel? But it's jumped to over $55 a barrel. And I was looking at some numbers from BP. Their refining market margin is up from $7.7 a barrel to $35.7 over the past year. Let me ask you then, Bob, what do you think has driven that huge margin increase? Is this just down to refining capacity?
It's like our other guests have said, it's really just a complete global market upset that is going on right now, where you've got increasing demand after the pandemic, the U.S. and other oil industries recovering after the fall during the pandemic, and then all of the transportation issues. In the U.S., we have huge transportation issues. One of the reasons is the refineries on the Gulf Coast, a lot of those can only refine heavy crudes. And since we're not importing heavy crudes from like Venezuela or bunker fuel or gasoline from Russia, it causes all kinds of upsets and keeps that crack spread very, very wide. That will eventually come down. And the thing that most people don't really realize about the oil and gas industry is that it is very competitive. And so if someone is price gouging, so to speak, somebody's going to step into that space at a lower price if they can. So it's a market upset. It'll eventually stabilize. But right now, there's so much going on with refinery capacity, with supply upset, and the boycotts that was mentioned earlier out of Iran and Venezuela, all causing these problems at the same time.
Well, given the market upset we're seeing now, why not make the most of the situation, given the margins, and increase refining output? I see a number of U.S. refining companies are already doing that, but others are already operating at, what, 90%, potentially going up to 95% over the rest of the summer. Josh, in your mind, are they taking advantage of the situation?
Absolutely not. So the spike that we saw in refining margins was directly correlated with the reduction in utilization of Chinese and Russian refiners. And in particular, when we saw almost a million barrels a day of Russian refined product exports fall off, that's where we saw these margins go up a lot. So what is interesting is that U.S. refiners are actually being good actors, and they've moved up their utilization. They're taking some risks in doing this. Mm-hmm. They're moved up their utilization from 90 to 95%. So I think they're actually doing the right thing. And it does show that refining capacity is tight, but the cause of it is not U.S. or European refiners price gouging. It's the opposite. They're doing what they can. It's that there is sort of limited refining capacity, and some of it, particularly in Russia and China, has been offline.
Thomas, what would it take to scale up refining capacity here?
Well, if you're going to do it in the United States, you're going to have to expand existing refineries or build new ones. That's a little bit doubtful, but, you know, there's a whole Caribbean region. There's the issue of Venezuela. And I know the administration, United States administration, is working on trying to get the Maduro administration to make some democratic concessions to legitimize lifting some sanctions and getting production going and perhaps doing something with the refineries. I mean, there's a huge potential there. And it's not only coming off of COVID, and as Bob pointed out, and Josh both, all the problems of adjusting. It's also this war in Ukraine. So it's a very funny situation. It's a short term that's very volatile and very uncertain, both in crude and in refined products. But if you go out 3 years or so or more, I would say, this is a geostrategic judgment, the West and their allies in Asia, Japan, Taiwan, and so forth, are going to turn Russia from a first world sort of, I'm sorry, from sort of an energy superpower in oil and gas to sort of a second-rate player. That's exactly what Fatih Birol, the head of the IEA, said just yesterday at a meeting. Going forward, after a few years, Russia will be reduced to a minor, you know, player, a second-rank player. And that means there's going to be huge possibilities for developing oil, new crude development, new fields, but also new refining capacity. Russia was supplying 2.5 million barrels a day of refined diesel to Northern Europe. That's all going to go away, and they can't just send that to Asia, that much oil. Some of it they can, but there's going to be a big change. But in the meantime, who knows? There's going to be a recession, probably, and there's other problems. So short term, it's a little iffy. It's very volatile. But longer term, there's going to be growth in the industry. There has to be.
Well, let's then talk a little bit more about the impact of the Ukraine war. I believe, Bob, you need specific Russian products also to actually run some specific types of refineries. And as you alluded to there, you obviously need specific types of crude to then efficiently produce certain things, diesel, for example. Now, we've mentioned Venezuela, the sanctions on Iran as well. And given that we've seen some bottlenecks around OPEC plus production, do you think that Russian sanctions have really contributed to the crunch that we're seeing?
Oh, I think it really has. I mean, I don't disagree with cutting off Russian crude, but to punish Putin for attacking Ukraine, but it does cause a huge upset. You know, we were back in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s in the States, a lot of refineries were built or modified to handle heavy crudes because that was primarily what was being produced in the U.S. After the horizontal, the unconventional drilling started back in the mid-2000s, 2007, 2008, that crude is a light, sweet crude that the Gulf Coast refineries can't handle. So under the Obama administration, we began being able to export again. So we're actually exporting light sweet crude and importing heavy crude that the refineries can handle. So the solution to that, obviously, is to build new refining capacity or to modify back to where we can handle the higher gravity crudes. But that is part of the issue of having to move. We're exporting and importing refined product, and we're importing and exporting crude. Mm-hmm. Because all oil is not equal. It has to match the facility that it's being shipped to.
Well, then just looking in terms of the margins of the prices that we're seeing, partly due to the Ukraine war, refined oil products have risen, what, between 30 and nearly 140% since Russia invaded Ukraine back in February. Now, that's compared to less than a 15% increase for a barrel of crude. Josh, do you think that we should expect that margin to increase even further as the war drags on?
No. I think it's already started to compress. Mm-hmm. So crack spreads, I think, got over 60. I think they might have even gotten over 70 very briefly, which was a $70 per barrel margin for refineries and refined products versus the input of crude. It's already down below 50. I think we might be getting to 40 or so recently. And so I think that there is this trend, which is as Russian refined product exports are back up, and as Chinese teapot refineries ramp back up as well, and as their export quotas are increased, I expect more sort of normalization, compressed refining margins, and potentially higher oil prices as more oil is consumed in refining to then deliver these oil products.
And just to explain to our viewers, the teapot refineries you're talking about in China are the non-state refineries that exist there. I do want to talk about China because it's currently, what, the world's second largest refiner, but potentially going to become the largest very soon. But from the figures, it really doesn't like to export its product. So last year, according to its own customs agency, it shipped about 1.21 million barrels a day of refined fuel. So fuel oil, gasoline, diesel, jet fuel. That's what, 7% of its total refining capacity? And now it's been cutting exports even further. Thomas, why is it doing that, given the state of the world economy?
Well, you know, if they've got a market for it at home, you know, why would you, generally speaking, why would you export refined products if you have a market for it at home? I know, I think things are a little bit complicated right now. In China, you know, everybody thought that they were recovering, and then they went through this whole series of lockdowns again. So now you have a situation where, you know, everybody expects a recession, so demand is going to soften. So that should ease all this stuff out, okay? That should ease the demand out. But at the same time, China's coming off of these lockdowns, and there's going to be some expansion there. So even though you're kind of going to a recession, you're going to have some expansion in China, and it's a complicated situation. I wouldn't expect China to export, you know, what anything that's not surplus. What I wish they would do is use more of their refining capacity so they could have kept exporting during this last COVID shutdown, but that isn't what they did.
Bob, you're sitting in Houston. How do you think the U.S. is viewing the limit that China has put on its refined oil exports? Is Biden keen to see that increase?
Well, I think in the States, we're the industry anyway. The industry believes this is going to work through over the next couple of years. For instance, I was looking at the NYMEX WTI crude curve this morning. You know, we're at like $94, $95 a barrel in the near month. In December of 23, it's $77. So it's almost $20 less in 2 years out. So the expectation is this is going to stabilize. I think where we're focused, I believe that what the industry talks about anyway, is being able to import more crudes. That Venezuela is close to being, and that's another 2.5 million barrels a day. It won't come up immediately, but it'll help. And that helps our refining capacity stay full with the heavy crude that comes from Venezuela. China, I think, is using their refinery capacity like they use everything else in their economy as a weapon against countries like the U.S. and the EU. And I think that's got to be something that we consider.
Well, given the state of play, let's look at where we go from here then, given the current situation. So in order for oil refining margins to drop and for prices to come down, there needs to be more capacity. And for that, you obviously need investment. Should we be expecting fresh investment in oil refining given the margins? Josh, would you be encouraging people to invest in this?
Yeah, so I think the challenge for refining in the U.S. is more related to environmental regulations mm-hmm. and permitting than it is a desire to expand. So Exxon has been expanding refineries here to better process light sweet crude coming from shale in West Texas. And, you know, they've had all kinds of issues, and there's just kind of this tremendous sort of regulatory and tax burden. One thing I do want to address, the status of the forward curve, I think there's a lot of misconceptions around it, and it being in backwardation, so oil being $100 right now and $70 2 years from now, is actually an indication of a very tight oil market. And it incentivizes oil to get pulled out of storage right now. And historically, when it's been in that sort of circumstance, oil prices have actually gone up over time, not down. So when you look at the incentives, there is an incentive to invest both in upstream as well as in refining. And what we're seeing is that there's a very tight market. There's a lot of tightness in the service capacity to be able to do these expansions. But specifically for refining, specifically in the U.S., there are huge regulations and taxes that get in the way.
Well, given that we are talking about this green transition, and President Biden has obviously said he wants to focus on renewables, and I see a number of the refineries that have gone offline are actually switching further towards biofuels. Thomas, do you see that trend continuing, or will there be some kind of a shift given the current state of affairs?
Well, I think ever since the ethanol revolution, which wasn't a revolution after all, there was never cellulosic ethanol. I think the idea of biofuels per se is really not going to take off. What everybody looks at is electric vehicles. Hmm. Now, if you look at, I think we need a dose of reality here. And there was a big problem, let's say the last decade, but also even during Corona, of sort of official optimism or something. 94% of everything that moves here in Germany's supposed to be one of the greenest countries around, if you listen to the government, but 94% of everything that moves on oil distillates. And, you know, it's about the same in the United States, everywhere in the world. You can look at how many electric car plants have been built in the world and how many they're producing. I mean, I haven't looked at it really close in a year or two, but if you look at the rate of increase that you expect just from the expansion of population and wealth in China and India and Africa, you see how many more cars, how many more vehicles will be on the road. You'll be lucky if electric cars can take up that those new cars, much less the whole base of the continuing base of oil-fueled cars that are still out there. So oil companies were under a lot of pressure to look like they're doing everything to transform to some new world, but the vehicles simply aren't there. The electric vehicles aren't there. There's major problems with batteries and those supply chains. And somehow this has to be balanced, that people can work on that without scaring the wits out of, you know, the companies and shaming the companies into not investing. And that's what happened the last few years. By not investing, I mean, there was also Corona, but by not investing, now we're stuck. And you'll see OPEC has been raising their quota. Biden asked them to raise their quota. Well, certain sense, it doesn't do any good. They can't meet their quota. They're a couple million barrels behind in what they're supposed to have produced over the last several months. Hmm. So a lot of investments are needed and a stable situation, a more realistic, pragmatic policy here.
Well, in terms of pragmatic policy, we're talking also about very specific kinds of distillates and demand for those, right? So, Bob, let me ask you about the trade-off that exists for refiners. By my understanding, let's say there's a shortage of diesel, like we're seeing now. You rejig things to produce more diesel. That means you end up producing potentially less jet fuel. And then air travel's also rebounding post-pandemic. So trying to then produce both reduces the output of petrol. What should be the focus here in your mind?
Well, I think what you said is correct. Also, the challenge that we have in the States is getting different fuels to different parts of the country. For instance, we import gasoline into California because it's easier to import it in rather than shipping it from the Gulf Coast because of the transportation issues. And so there's all these different issues that we have to deal with in terms of getting the right fuel in the right place. Mm. And I agree with Thomas on the whole electric vehicle issue. I don't think we can replace the petrol powered vehicles with electric vehicles fast enough, especially with the manufacturing battery issues, the recycling of those batteries, and we haven't talked about the power grid. The power grid is another gigantic challenge, especially right now in Texas. Yeah. And so with all those different things floating around, the most important thing is to keep commerce moving, which is primarily jet fuel, diesel, and gasoline. Mm-hmm.
Well, if oil refineries in the U.S. aren't necessarily coming back online, we're not necessarily seeing the investment that's required to do that. I see more refineries are, though, being built in the Middle East and Asia. Josh, very briefly, how soon do you think that could make a difference?
Yeah, so there are projects ongoing. I think the bigger thing is just the ramp up in the independent refineries in China, the teapots, as well as ramp up in Russian refined product exports. And so between the two of those, it does look like the refining market is coming into balance in the short term. I'm not sure there's going to be a balance over the next few years. I think there's probably insufficient refining capacity right now that's reliable relative to the likely demand increase. I agree with the other panelists. I don't see the electric vehicle transition coming on fast enough to be able to address this shortage of oil and refined capacity. So I think it makes sense to be considering expanding additional refining capacity, even though this short-term sort of super squeeze in refining margins is starting to dissipate.
Clearly something that isn't going to be resolved anytime soon. Well, thank you to all of our guests, Bob Kavner, Thomas O'Donnell and Josh Young. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see this program again anytime by visiting our website. That's aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nastasia Tay, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.